Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith.
The Mexican economy is being transformed in a way that benefits U.S. corporations and U.S. investors, but the people who are paying the price of that are the people who are being displaced and coming here.
David Bacon is a California journalist who documents labor, migration, and globalization. He visited Trinity College in December of 2009 to discuss his latest book, Illegal People: How Globalization Creates Immigration and Criminalizes Immigrants. In Illegal People, David Bacon tells the personal and political stories of immigrants. It is a dark story of corporations that have come to rely on cheap immigrant labor from Latin America, and how they turn on the very employees that have earned them their wealth by threatening them with calls to INS, the Immigration Office of the U.S. government, when they complain about wages, working conditions, health insurance, or their desire to join a union. David Bacon has called on U.S. citizens to defend immigrants and even illegal workers, and we asked him to explain why.
First of all, we need a kind of a reality check about the communities we're living in. We have many, many people in our communities here in the United States who were born in other countries. In fact, there are about 40 million people maybe living in the United States right now who were born somewhere else. That's not actually the highest percentage of immigration that we've ever had. If you go back to the period right before World War I, when most immigration was coming from Central and Southern Europe, immigrants constituted about 15% of the population. Now it's about 9%, but whatever the percent is, it's a lot of people. So we need to have communities in which we live with each other with mutual respect, appreciate the contribution that we all make as working people, economically and culturally and socially, and try to adhere to the ideals that we've had for our country, especially the ideals of equality and the ideals of rights. Within that 40 million people, there are about 12 million people who don't have legal immigration status. What that means is that this is a section of our population, of our communities, who don't have the same rights that other people do. And sometimes that denial of rights can become pretty extreme, as in the case of workers who are picked up in immigration raids in their workplace and put on buses and sent south to detention centers and then held for months in detention centers and then finally deported and put back across the border. So the consequences of the denial of rights can be very serious, both to the people who are immediately affected, but also to the rest of us, because you can't really deny rights to one section of our population without having a big impact on the people who are living and working around them. Just to give you an example, if you have a union organizing drive, as was the case at some of the meatpacking plants where we've had immigration raids over the last couple of years, and there are workers in those meatpacking plants are trying to organize a union and get the wages up and get more benefits, which is something that would benefit, you know, all the people working in those plants. When you have the immigration come in and pick people up and deport people, what really happens is that everybody gets terrified and their willingness and ability to organize a union gets really impacted, and that really hurts everybody. So it's not just the people who are deported who wind up suffering as a result of it, but all of those people living and working around them. So we really need to kind of look at our communities and ask ourselves whether we want to move forward towards a society and a world in which people are, relatively speaking, equal in terms of their rights and in terms of their social status, or move backwards to an era which I think reminds me of the era before the Civil Rights Movement, in which a huge section of our population really has significantly fewer political and social and economic rights.
We've seen a kind of popular culture grow out of anti-immigrant rhetoric, you know, the political climate favoring those willing to take a hard line against immigrants. And I'm thinking of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, but also, you know, wondering if things are going to change under the Obama administration.
Well, Joe Arpaio has become kind of a symbol of the abuse of immigrant people in a way that reminds me of Bull Connor, the famous sheriff in the South who became a symbol of the resistance of Southern authorities to the civil rights movement, of the beatings and the hosing and the other ways in which the efforts by African-American people to achieve their rights were met with, you know, brutality and arrests and so on. And Joe Arpaio is sort of a modern-day Bull Connor and a modern-day symbol of abuse and the denial of rights by people in authority. In his case, you know, he arrests people on the streets of Phoenix because of what they look like, accuses people of not having immigration papers, sometimes falsely, holds them, turns them over to immigration authorities, operates a tent city that's sort of like an outdoor prison, parades undocumented people through the streets in chains and uniforms, you know, just on the one hand really abusing people, and on the other hand kind of whipping up racist and anti-immigrant hysteria in Phoenix and trying to sort of create a climate of fear and terror for immigrant people, especially Mexicans and Latinos who are living there. What's more disturbing about Joe Arpaio, though, is that he has been, in a sense, subsidized by the federal government through what are called 287G agreements, in which the federal government and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement reaches an arrangement with local police authorities in which local police authorities begin enforcing immigration law and then get money and perks from the federal government for doing so. And Joe Arpaio was a recipient for a long time of 287G funding. We had hopes that when the Obama administration came into office, the administration would stop the 287G program, because it's really not the responsibility of local police to enforce immigration law. That's why we have an Immigration and Customs Enforcement Administration, although I think you can criticize in many ways the way in which they go about enforcing the law, but there's certainly no reason why we need to have local authorities doing that. And what happens as a result of it is a lot of racial profiling and abuse, and Joe Arpaio is a symbol of it. But instead of reversing those 287G agreements, the administration has let out a whole new series of 287G contracts, essentially continuing the Bush enforcement policy. And unfortunately, I think that's been the way the Obama administration has approached other elements of the Bush enforcement policy as well, too. I can think of a couple of other really important examples or cases of that. One is the detention system itself. When Bush came into office, we really had very few large detention facilities specifically for immigrants. And under Bush, the detention system mushroomed. We had corporations like the GEO Corporation, which used to be called Wackenhut, which was called Pinkertons before that, and anybody in the labor movement remembers the Pinkertons because they were the gun thugs that were hired by employers back in the 20s and 30s to beat people when they were organizing unions and going out on strike. And now this company runs many privately run detention facilities for holding immigrants for immigration violations. Immigration violations used to result in people being asked to voluntarily leave the country and being deported if they didn't. Now what happens to people is that people get put into essentially privately run federal prisons. And last year, we had 387,000 people held in immigration detention facilities and prisons. And at any one time, there were over 35,000 people in these privately run prisons. The Obama administration, again, we had hopes that they would begin to dismantle this detention system. And instead, we're seeing a continuation of that policy. And the final element of it is what's happening in our workplaces. We saw a lot of very high-profile immigration raids, including the one in New Bedford under the Bush administration, in which ICE agents came in black uniforms with submachine guns and rounded up immigrants and deported some people and threw other people into prison and then deported them afterwards. Under the Obama administration, what we're getting is what's being called a softer form of enforcement, where the ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is auditing the personnel records now of 1,654 companies and sort of sifting through those records to find people who they believe are undocumented, and then ordering companies to fire those people. So we've had so far the firing of 2,000 sewing machine operators at the American Apparel clothing company in Los Angeles. We had the firing of 1,200 janitors working for American Building Maintenance in Minneapolis. And the administration says, as I said, that they're going to audit 1,654 companies with a lot more firings to come. It's really, I can't understand how the administration can have an economic recovery plan and at the same time require the firings of hundreds of thousands of workers. But this is what their official immigration enforcement program is. And again, we had hopes that the administration would stop the Bush workplace enforcement program. And instead, what we're getting is a kind of enforcement which is not only a very brutal one for the people who get fired, but is one that historically has been really open to abuse by employers. Employers have essentially fired people, especially during union organizing efforts or when workers have protested unfair wages and conditions, and then covered themselves by accusing those workers of being undocumented in order to justify the firings. And I expect that we're going to see a great deal of it under this policy. So I think that there is a real question right now as to what direction the administration is going to go in terms of enforcement. And so far, it does not seem as though it is really making any kind of serious effort to reverse some of the worst and most damaging policies of the Bush administration.
You say, quote, the U.S. faces a basic choice or direction for immigration policy. There is a corporate agenda on migration promoted by powerful voices in Washington, D.C., like the Council on Foreign Relations and the employer lobby, known as the Essential Worker Immigration Coalition. Members include Walmart, the Marriott Hotel chain, Tyson Foods. These are the corporations that workers already struggle with, American-born workers, you know, in terms of equal pay, in terms of, you know, for women, in terms of their basic rights as workers. Can you articulate, again, some of the concerns that American workers have in common with immigrants who come to the U.S.? Because it seems as if this policy, as you've said, is really affecting everyone.
The corporate agenda on migration is essentially to use the migration of people as a labor supply system here in the United States. And again, this is not just something that is happening here, but this is a policy that is shared by employers in almost all wealthy industrialized countries, Great Britain, Germany, France, Japan, the countries of Europe, and so forth. So it's really, on the one hand, a policy that displaces people in their communities of origin. In other words, in Mexico, in Central America, trade agreements that the United States has negotiated, like the North American Free Trade Agreement, have the effect of making people much poorer, impoverishing whole communities. Just as an example, the North American Free Trade Agreement allowed big U.S. grain companies, Archer Daniels Midland, Cargill, to dump corn on the Mexican market at prices that we are subsidizing as taxpayers here in the United States through our farm bill, which had $2 billion in subsidies for U.S. grain producers. So those grain companies then take that subsidized grain, dump it on the Mexican market at prices that are so low that they are below what it costs a Mexican farmer to grow the same crop, essentially to drive those farmers out of business, out of corn production. And we're talking about very small communities of very small producers in southern Mexico in particular. And so when it becomes impossible for people in those communities who have been farming corn for literally hundreds and hundreds of years, long before Columbus ever came to the Americas, then those people have to do something in order to survive, in order to put food on the table for their families. And so increasingly, the only option that's available for people is to look for work elsewhere. So people go elsewhere in Mexico looking for work. But because of these agreements and because of the economic reforms that are in many ways imposed on Mexico by the World Bank and by other institutions, essentially in the interest of bankers from the United States and from other wealthy countries, there are not enough jobs in Mexico for all the people who need to work. People migrate north in Mexico. Some of them get jobs in the maquiladoras, the very low-wage factories right along the U.S.-Mexico border, where U.S. companies have relocated production from the U.S. in order to cut their labor costs. But there aren't nearly enough jobs in those maquiladoras to absorb all of those people who are being displaced either. So especially now with the recession, because really we're not buying what those factories are producing because we don't have any money in our pockets either. So people migrate across the border looking for work here in the United States. And because there are no visas really available for people to be able to come here, people cross the border without visas, which is the source of the 12 million undocumented people who are living here. So large corporations benefit, first of all, by those free trade agreements. You know, companies like Cargill and Orchard Daniels Midland sell corn at a profit in Mexico. Walmart has become the largest retailer in Mexico. In other words, they are the largest seller of the tortillas that are made from the corn. So, you know, increasingly the Mexican economy is being transformed in a way that benefits U.S. corporations and U.S. investors, but the people who are paying the price of that are the people who are being displaced and coming here. But that's also a source of labor for those same corporations here in the United States. And so increasingly, those large corporations want to transform immigration policy in the U.S. so that it furnishes the labor of those people to employers here in the United States at a very low wage. And their way of doing that are what are called guest worker programs, in which the movement of people across the border is managed or controlled or systematized so that people get a visa to come to the United States that says you can only come here to work, and if you lose your job, you get deported and you have to go home. And so people have no political rights. They have very few labor rights. They're simply here in order to work and to work at as low a wage as possible. And in order to force people to come through those programs, they are increasing enforcement through the means that we've been talking about, those 287G agreements or the raids in workplaces or the firings in workplaces, essentially a way of saying to people, if you try and come here outside of these labor supply programs, we are going to send you to prison, and then we're going to deport you afterwards. So enforcement and guest worker programs, they go hand in hand. And that is the corporate agenda on migration and the big immigration bills that we have seen in Congress over the last few years and that we are going to see again in the coming Congress are really all, in the end, designed to supply labor for large corporations in this very controlled way at a price that those corporations want to pay. So increasingly, immigrant rights organizations and organizations in the African American community and unions are trying to figure out what an alternative system would look like that would be fair to both working people in the United States and fair to those migrants. And the alternatives that people are talking about include, for instance, the renegotiation of those trade agreements that prohibit trade agreements that displace people and that impoverish communities and force people into migration. And also to ensure that those people who do migrate and come to the United States have rights, that they can join unions, that people can get together with the people in the communities around them and protest if the wages are too low or to organize or to do things that will increase the living standard and benefit everybody, because it really does benefit all of our communities if all of us have rights. And if the people who come here don't have any rights, then what we have is a situation where employers take advantage of that to push down people's wages and to exploit them.
I want to ask you to give us a quick description of what the maquiladora is for people who don't know.
Maquiladoras are foreign-owned factories that were built along the border between the U.S. and Mexico, right south of the border, under a program in which the Mexican government allowed U.S. companies and after a while, you know, companies from Japan and other countries as well, too, to build factories that would make products for export to the United States, but at very, very, very low wages. So the people going to work in those maquiladoras, for instance, have to work half a day just in order to make enough money to buy a gallon of milk. So these are essentially low-wage factories for export along the U.S.-Mexico border.
Well, former President Bush did back down on some of the more draconian immigration policies that were being called for by, you know, members of Congress more on the right, essentially expel everyone. But you quote former Homeland Security Chief Michael Chertoff as saying, there's an obvious solution to the problem of illegal work. You open the front door and you shut the back door. This kind of black and white thinking was very prominent during the Bush years. But Bush himself said, you know, we need immigrants, or rather corporations need immigrants. And that, of course, raises the longstanding debate on the whole nature of work and who will do what types of work and what everyone should have as rights, or if those rights should be equal.
I think that it's important for us to remember, because we do have a lot of unemployment in the United States right now, and people are afraid for their jobs and do see their plants closing and are losing their jobs. And I think that is where people like Lou Dobbs come in, trying to point to immigrants and say, well, that's the reason why you're losing your job, is because they're immigrants here. And remember that when General Motors closes factories, it's not immigrants who are closing those factories or taking anybody's jobs. We have, you know, decisions that are made by big U.S. corporations and banks and people in government who protect those interests that are responsible for the high unemployment that we have now. Unemployment is not being produced by immigrants. It is being produced by corporations and the economy that they are essentially running for their benefit. So if we want jobs in this economy, we have to, on the one hand, require our government to put some conditions, for instance, on the bailout of General Motors. Why we gave General Motors billions of dollars without requiring them to keep the plants open so that the workers who make those cars will still have jobs. You know, that was, I think, a big mistake. We need to have requirements on corporations that they keep employment here, that they keep jobs here. And at the same time, if the private sector in this country is not capable and willing to produce enough jobs to bring the unemployment rate down, then the federal government has to do what it did during the 1930s, which is set up jobs programs so that anybody who wants to go to work can go to work. That's how we're going to deal with the problem of unemployment, not by scapegoating immigrants who don't have responsibility for the way in which the economy here is being run. And if we have those jobs programs, I think that all working people will benefit, whether they're immigrants or non-immigrants. But for immigrants in particular, so that's part of what a good immigration policy looks like, is part of it is a jobs program so that people can go to work and support their families, regardless of what your immigration status is or where you come from. But in that workplace and in our communities, all people need rights. And that includes legal status. It's really hard to have any rights if you don't have any legal status. So we need to ensure that the people who don't have legal status get it. That's something, again, that's going to benefit all of our communities. And we need to get rid of the laws that we have that are criminalizing people, putting them in jail and in prison because of their immigration status, especially in the workplace. Get rid of the laws that say that it's a crime for people to work if they don't have legal immigration status, because that, again, gets used against immigrants. It denies them their ability to fight and protest for better conditions, but it also hurts everybody in the communities around them. We need to protect our family reunification system so that we have an immigration system that really functions in order to reunite people's families and to protect and strengthen our communities, rather than using immigration just simply as a supply of cheap labor for corporations. So protecting the family reunification system is something that's also really important. We need to change our trade policy so that it doesn't result in the displacement of people in other countries. We need to get rid of those guest worker programs, you know, the ones that treat people essentially as kind of indentured servants, using their visa status to make people vulnerable, and then just ensure that our legal system treats all people fairly. I think that, you know, the bottom line here really is what I call rights and jobs. That's what a good immigration policy looks like. It basically ensures that we have rights, that people are treated equally, and that we have employment for anybody who wants to go to work.
David Bacon, what about health care? I know before he lost his job at CNN, Lou Dobbs was always talking about the way immigrants, and especially illegal immigrants, were going to use up all of the nation's health care dollars.
We need to have a health care system in this country that basically provides health care to everybody that lives here. That's the kind of health care system they have in almost all the other countries in the world, especially all the other developed countries, where it's really taken as kind of a matter of course that anybody living there can go to the doctor if they're sick, and go to a hospital if they're very sick, and get medical care. And if you go to France or the UK, or you don't have to be a citizen of those countries in order to get medical care, because those countries recognize that it's in the interests of everybody to ensure that we have a healthy population. After all, you know, diseases and illnesses are communicated. They don't stay just confined to, you know, sick people themselves. So in order for us all to be healthy, we need to make sure that we're treating illnesses and sicknesses, you know, regardless of who has them. But beyond that, health care is a right that all working people have, and we need to recognize that in this country. So starting to draw those lines and say, you know, some people are going to get medical treatment if they're sick and other people won't. On the one hand, this is really a denial of a right that I think we ought to defend for all working people, regardless of where you come from or what your legal status is. But also, that kind of an approach really endangers the health of everybody, because, you know, germs don't ask for visa status or legal status when they invade your body. So, you know, if we have one group of people in our population who can't get any medical care, then that's a group of people whose health is going to suffer as a result of it. And the problems they have are pretty soon going to be problems that are shared with the rest of the population around them. So it's not in anybody's interest to have a healthcare system that starts to draw lines of about who can get healthcare and who can't based on people's immigration status.
And given the high cost of healthcare in America, has the whole project of globalization really failed, in that it seems as if Americans are suffering more and more from the soaring costs of basically just living here, as opposed to the lack of increase in average wages and in the numbers of people who have good jobs that can be counted on?
Well, absolutely. You know, we have a very backwards healthcare system, one that is sort of advanced technologically in terms of its ability to provide high-tech treatments, but is very backwards in terms of its ability to provide basic health care coverage and ensure a healthy population for all the people that live in this country. And increasingly, it's an extremely expensive system, because it is one of the very, very few healthcare systems in the world that are operated as a profit-making enterprise. There is no real rational reason why a healthcare system should be operated as a profit-making business. These are basic services that we all need as human beings, and basically we need to ensure that these systems are run in order to provide the service rather than to provide the profit. And if we do that, then they will be a lot more efficient and a lot less expensive to run, because we will have eliminated the draining of those systems of a great deal of our resources, essentially, in order to provide profits to private owners.
Journalist David Bacon is author of the book Illegal People: How Globalization Creates Immigration and Criminalizes Immigrants. His December 15th piece, Should We Defend Illegal Workers?, was published in Truthout. He's also written for The Nation, The American Prospect, The Progressive, and The San Francisco Chronicle. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. Our music is by Fritz Heed.